Hello and welcome to episode 13 of the Full 90 Coaching Podcast. I'm your host, Coach Ted Steen, and today I had the pleasure of speaking with Nancy Feldman, who was one of my instructors during the United Soccer Coaches Premier Diploma course I took earlier this month. Nancy is the head women's coach at Boston University and has over 30 years of experience coaching at the collegiate level. We had a deep discussion around the importance of community service, the value of young athletes playing multiple sports, and how she supports the development of her players into becoming young women through soccer. So, without further ado, let's get into episode 13. I am on the phone now with Coach Nancy Feldman of Boston University. Nancy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm actually starting my 4th of July weekend, heading toward Cape Cod. Is the sound look okay with in the car here, or do you want me to go on non-speakerphone?
The sound is fine right now. Yeah, it's perfect.
Great.
So why don't you get started? Just tell us a little bit about your coaching background and what you're doing now.
Sure. Well, I've been in the college game for, I guess, where we're now looking at over 30 years. I think I've tipped over 30 years working with all levels of college. It wasn't my initial plan to be a college coach back in 1983 when I graduated from college from the University of Massachusetts. I was a player. Fortunately, I came along a couple of years after women's soccer and girls' soccer started to be an opportunity for playing. And every step of the way, youth, high school, and college, I was right there in year two or three of established programs. So I was a player. I graduated. I thought I was going to go into medical school, follow that pathway. And long story short, I, in between applying to medical school, not getting in the first time and trying to figure out if I wanted to go for it again, I started dabbling in coaching high school level. And then I went to grad school for college. I went to grad school to get a master's in exercise and sports studies. And I did some college coaching program requirement. And after I was done, I obviously at that point was walked out with a master's, walked out with some college coaching experience, and my college coaching career started at a Division III school in Illinois, Lake Forest College, and continued at another Division III school in New England called Plymouth State College. And then I was fortunate enough to get a Division I coaching job coaching just soccer. I was coaching other sports at those other two positions, and in my hometown. My hometown is Boston, and 23 years ago, I was hired as the Boston University head women's soccer coach.
That's fantastic. And you said you were coaching other sports at those other schools?
Yes, I coached softball at Lake Forest in addition to soccer, and I coached basketball at Plymouth State for 5 years. I was also coaching soccer, and those seasons overlapped. So that was I was coaching from middle of August all the way till about near the end of March. That was a challenge. The coaching, not so much. The recruiting was getting to be really, really challenging to recruit for two sports. And Plymouth State had very competitive programs. We went to the NCAA tournament in each of the 5 years I was there in soccer and went to a final game for Division III for the national championship in soccer. And actually, by the time I was done, we were an NCAA participant in basketball as well. So it was getting increasingly more difficult to recruit for both sports, putting in the time and the energy. And I loved my time. You know, to me, people ask, well, what's the difference of coaching at different levels? You know, I definitely, college coaching at all levels is wonderful. I didn't think there was a whole lot of difference because we had committed athletes. We were vying for championships. Coaching is coaching, you know, and the only difference really at Division I is we're working with athletic scholarship. And certainly coaching only one sport, I can become more of a specialist than I was trying to coach two sports. But that's actually the way things are in Division III now. All the Division III coaches that I know coaching soccer are just coaching soccer now. So it's really more of an evolution of collegiate sport that things have become more specialized, and that's obviously the case in the youth game as well, that we don't have a lot of multi-sport athletes anymore. My experiences of coaching other sports certainly have shaped me as a coaching professional, and I think I take things from other sports just maybe more naturally than others do in how I apply them to coaching soccer. I think that that is something that I've done my whole life just because I was a multi-sport athlete myself.
Excellent. And just to give you background, we actually met last week at the United Soccer Coaches Premier Diploma, and I remember you saying in one of your presentations that you, when in your coaching, you actually pull topics and ideas from other sports as well, but I had no idea that you were also a softball and basketball coach.
Yeah, so that is definitely hidden in my background there and deep in my resume.
And so you had mentioned as well that you see that kids are becoming more specialists in a single sport as opposed to being multi-sport athletes. Do you think that's helping them or hurting them?
Oh, boy. How much time do you have? I am a proponent of cross-training. I'm a proponent of being a multi-sport athlete as much as you can or as long as you can. So, you know, when we recruit and a kid says she wants to play basketball, she played it her freshman year but gave it up her sophomore and junior year to focus entirely on soccer and her club requirements or demands. And, of course, she has to do well in the classroom to be qualified for Boston University admission. So I get it that kids have to make choices. But if she asked me if I would support her playing basketball for her senior year because she really loves it and wants to, she gets an absolute YES with an exclamation point from me. I'm like, yeah, definitely go for it. Have a good time. It's great for you. And I think there's a lot of takeaways. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why I think it's powerful. I think using different muscles and just having that different demands, I think that's healthy. I think mentally it's healthy. Mm-hmm. I think you may play a different role on the basketball team. You may be a role player versus a standout superstar. I think there's a lot to be learned when you are asked to play a different role. You may be a defensive specialist. A lot of soccer players are defensive specialists on the basketball court because they're not refined in their skills, offensive skills, but they're very good athletes. And so I think for those reasons, psychologically, I think physiologically, and I also think there's some skills that you take away from it. I think footwork, I'm a big believer in footwork and individual attacking and defending in soccer. And I think basketball is a great way to work on your footwork and your agility and your ability to drop step and rotate your hips. And I mean, so I can go on for a long time, but I am a proponent of it. I know there's a reality of to get 10,000 touches, you know, to become an expert at soccer, to become really competent on the ball and with the ball, you have to train with the ball. So, and there's only so much time. But I do think kids are specializing too early. And I think it is, I don't think it's in our best interest, to tell you the truth, to develop great players.
Yeah, and I grew up as a multi-sport athlete myself. And, you know, with kids that are specializing too early these days, I often see that there's burnout.
For sure. Yeah, that's the same as saying, you know, I think you should play, you know, have one coach all the way through, one club coach hockey experience. I don't think you should, for this very same reason. I mean, there's a little difference, the nuance, but it, you know, they see you the same way, you're playing the same role, you're hearing the same voice.
Yeah.
I just think if you play another sport and you get a mentor that's not a soccer coach, sometimes they can find ways to bring out the best in you that the one soccer coach you have all the way through your youth experience just doesn't tap into. And anyway, that might be an old-fashioned view, but I think there's some things that I've held on to philosophically that I joke a little tongue-in-cheek, it's old-fashioned. I actually think there's things I've held on to philosophically that still would be better than some of the advances, supposed advances that have been made in youth sport, player development. And maybe that'll be found out. Maybe we'll come back to a middle ground somewhere. But more is not always better. Quantity is not always better. And quantity in doing one thing is not always better.
Mm-hmm. And I'm right there with you with the rotation of coaches, because when players move on to whether it's high school or college, they're most likely going to get a different coach than whoever coached them during club. So if they can get into the different coaches and different coaching styles earlier on in their careers, they'll be better set to adapt.
For sure. I mean, we have a young lady who came here as a freshman, Anna Helferty from Virginia, and played high school, played on a small club team. Not an ECNL team, not a DA team. Had a very good coach, Ann Germain, wonderful youth coach in Virginia, and came to BU and had a stellar freshman year. I suggested to the national staff that they take a peek at her. We sent some video. She ended up getting into youth national team camps this winter and spring for consideration for U19 national team and for the U20 World Cup. She was under consideration. She went into two events and was invited to a third, which she couldn't go to because it conflicted with finals. Long story short, she, one, didn't play, played other sports in high school, didn't play on ECNL team or DA team, and played for me. We're not a top 10, 15 program here at BU, but we have a very competitive team, play a very competitive schedule. But she had to go, and she when she went into camp, when she came to BU, we asked her to play a little bit of outside back, even though she was an attacking player for a club team. Mm-hmm. She transitioned to do that very well. When she went into national camp, they put her at left back. So there's a lot in that story. And what you just said, Ted, is she wasn't afraid or intimidated because she had a little bit of an experience playing another position. Mm-hmm. Playing for another coach, and went into national camp and did very well transitioning to that environment, playing a different position, playing for a different coach, and coming from not what you would say would be a normal pathway. So there are a lot of those kids out there, and I think they're scouring for those kids. They're scouring for those kids because they don't want program players.
Mm-hmm.
And they want untapped potential. That's what we're all looking for. Not a kid that, has only done one thing for the last 5 years and basically may have reached her full potential.
Yeah, exactly. Interesting.
So, well, I'll get off my soapbox. So what else would you like to talk about? I'm happy to share with those that are listening in anything that you think would be of interest.
Yeah, definitely. Well, just to circle back, you had mentioned that when you had graduated from college, you weren't quite looking to become a coach right off the bat. You were looking to do the medical school route, you said it didn't quite pan out. So what were the other driving forces behind you becoming a coach?
Well, I'm a bit, I guess they used to call someone like me a little hyperactive. Now they put those kids on medication. So I think I have a motor. I'm kinetic. I don't like to sit around too much. I think sport always played and was going to play a big part. And that's why I think I liked about medicine, right? It's a very active, mental and physical, active career path. In what I pictured myself doing in medicine. And so being in sport and being a coaching professional certainly fit my personality. I love being outdoors. I love working with youth and young people. I probably would have been a pediatrician. I've always been attracted to young people, and there's a lot of energy that comes from the relationship with working with youth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm competitive. I am, task oriented. I set goals. I love process of and working toward, you know, and working towards something, but also seeing small incremental improvements. Just, I mean, I'm a linear person. I'm not super creative, but to go from point A to point B, and this is where I'm at, or this is where we're at, and this is where we want to go. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I put my nose to the grindstone. I'm willing to roll up my sleeves. And so coaching just kind of incorporates all of that. What I was attracted to about soccer, more than other sports as a player and I think as a coaching professional, it is the ultimate team game. I probably am more of a socialist than I am a believe in a system where, you know, there's a hierarchy of, of one person in charge. So I'm a bit more democratic and social leaning in my thinking about groups.
Mm-hmm.
And soccer is the ultimate game for group and teamwork. And so it just was all of those things, I think, just drew me to it. And I think, you know, in some ways, it found me versus I found it. I just kept carrying on, and just my pathway took me that way. And I've just been very, very, very fortunate that opportunities have presented themselves to me and in college coaching. And, you know, doors opened, and I think I worked hard, but that's how it came to pass.
Excellent. And when we were talking about our playing background before, you were saying that you were on the cutting edge of when these programs were just getting started, like year two or three. So what was that like playing in the women's programs as they were just getting installed into the school system?
Yeah. Well, I didn't really know a lot better than what was sort of in front of me. I didn't really think a lot about, well, this is a new opportunity, aren't I lucky? And looking back historically, I certainly now have a perspective that I was very fortunate that those that came before me, it didn't happen by magic. Women mostly came before me, fought for equality in opportunity, and I was the beneficiary of that. So Carol Bambury at my high school, you know, I came to find out that she wouldn't take no for an answer to start girls soccer. So I don't think I knew any better. I just love to play and love to compete. Mm-hmm. And I felt like we were treated right. I felt I was given a platform to play the game at Needham High School, you know, at UMass Amherst. And as I got a little older, I recognized that I had to keep fighting the fight at times for equal opportunity and equity and resources for the players that I started to coach. Title IX certainly was a big part of that, and mm-hmm. People doing the right thing and breaking through barriers that I was, you know, I was a bit of part, certainly a part of that, but I also benefited from the women and the men that came before me that believed that girls and women, look at it now. I mean, look at it now. There's, I wouldn't say complete equity. I don't think there's still equity in salaries for coaches.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think there's necessarily equity in all cases I think salaries is a big one. I think, and I think in coach hiring, I don't think there's equity. But I think for opportunity for the girls and women, there's certainly not equity in media. I think this is wonderful, Ted, that you asked me to come on your podcast. I don't think there's equity across media outlets with coverage. But, I mean, that's going to come. There's not equity in salaries of professional players, certainly.
Yeah.
So those are – but I think light has been shed on all that. But I think for our student athletes at the collegiate level, I think there's as close to equity as you know, I think we're as close to equity as possible, or as what would be even, because a lot of light has been shed on it over the years.
Mm-hmm. And
honestly, I just feel so blessed to have you on the podcast. So again, thank you for taking the time out of your day to give us some of your insight into your coaching. And I also wanted to touch on, you also just said women were fighting for the equality and the opportunity, and it's really just about people doing the right thing. And that resonated with me because back at the premier course, you had mentioned how you focus a great deal on community service and getting your teams involved in that. And that's something that I look forward to implementing with my new teams starting later on this summer into the fall. Would you want to just touch on that a bit about the importance of community service?
Yeah, we do believe in it at Boston University, and our program at BU and women's soccer has been a leader in our department in the early years of just having it be a requirement of being a student athlete in on our team.
Yep.
And our kids did over 700 hours of community service last year.
Right.
We have, and they do more than what's asked, and that's the beauty of it. So what's the value of it? Well, we are working mostly with a population of student athletes that are very, have had a lot of opportunity, that come from, whether that's, you know, socioeconomically or with strong family structures, with great education, in their, you know, they've been able to go to schools that are well-funded, in good communities, that take good care of making sure that they are well taken care of, they're safe. So that's the population we mostly are getting to work with at BU. And in most of the college environments, they haven't gotten there because they come from disadvantaged situations. They come from advantaged situations. So I think it's important for them, if they don't have it already when they come, that they understand that they how grateful they should be and how privileged they are. And that there are a lot of young people, and we don't work with just young people, but there are a lot of citizens in this country and outside of our country that just don't have the advantages and the opportunity they have, that are in less advantaged situations and are underserved populations. So it's just shedding light on that, is opening up their eyes as citizens, as part of their education as a university student going out into the world in 4 or 5 years, that they get a perspective of that if they don't already have it. And so I feel like we're, you know, have a responsibility. So that's one of our principles and one of the goals. And the gals embrace it. They absolutely they come to love the opportunity to give back. We are advantaged, and we are have a responsibility to give back. So our kids do all sorts of things in the Boston community, in their home communities. When they go home, they can satisfy their community service requirements. And then internationally, we've had gals that have gone into Soccer Without Border trips, coaches across continents, which are wonderful organizations. People have devoted, that are working for them, that are devoting their lives to making a difference. And the United Kids Soccer Development Organization, which is the organization I went to Kenya with, is another one of those that I got connected to through the leader of that organization, Lee Doherty, that I just felt compelled to model what our expectations of our student athletes, and to also satisfy something in me that, you know, I've done, soccer has given me a lot of things. It's given me wonderful travel opportunities through ODP, Costa Rica and Brazil and Spain and Maccabi games. I went to Israel, and I've had opportunities to travel and be put in working with kids and with teams that got to play internationally. So I just felt like, you know, I needed to put my money down to take a trip that wasn't about me, that was about bringing something to kids that were underserved in Kibera, Nairobi, Kenya, and that mostly the message I wanted to send was that they matter, that those kids matter, and that there are people out there that care about them, that want to support them, that believe that they can, you know, become more than they, you know, than their situation is right now, that they can dream, and soccer can be a part of the way that they reach their goals and their dreams and aspirations.
That's fantastic, and thank you so much for making that such a critical part of your program. I know, like you said, it was a requirement, but when you have your girls, like you said, who are just so thrilled to be a part of something like that, I think it's part of you instilling that into your team's culture. So thank you for doing that.
You're welcome. And I appreciate, Ted, that you heard that message. And I really don't like to sound like I'm preaching when I teach those courses. And I do believe there's many different ways to affect the players in our programs. And there's really powerful ways to do it. And I don't profess to know every single way to do it. Mm-hmm. But I really appreciate that you heard that and you took that away. And it doesn't have to be anything super grand that people start to install into their program. And there's only so much time, and we can only have so much contact with our kids, and they have only so much time to do what they need to do. But even if it's a little bit, even if it's just, you know, one time a season, we take our team to some place as a team. It could, you know, it's kind of in that team building category too. It can, mm-hmm. it can be economical because it can be part of your team building, and we do something together that's a give back. I just think that we have a platform, and that we can affect positive change in our community.
Fantastic. Yeah. I'm sure we could keep talking about this for a while longer, but, I'll get in touch with you after the podcast and we can keep going.
Sounds good.
So getting back into the playing experience, do you think that you need to have playing experience to coach the game?
Oh, wow. I don't really think so. No. I mean, if you look at other sports, no, I don't think so. I think there's lots of coaches. I don't think you have to be a top level player to coach soccer. No, I do not think that. Do I think that you know, at some point have experienced kicking the ball around? Yeah, because I think there has to be a passion to the game.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's a passion to the game, even if you haven't played the sport until you're adult, but that you experience playing the sport, I think that would be, I think, important.
Mm-hmm.
But that could be, you know, you're a 35-year-old mom that soccer wasn't offered as a opportunity, or you chose to play field hockey and you were a great field hockey player at college, but then your kids start playing soccer.
Mm-hmm.
I think you could be a coach for sure. But maybe you start to play on an adult team, you know, maybe you've stayed active, or maybe you just play around with the kids a little bit, or maybe you play beach soccer, or, you know, or you take a coaching course and you get out there on the field, and you might not be one of the best players at the coaching course, but you try to get into some of the sessions that are you know, part of the coaching course. So I do think you have to have dabbled a little bit, but I do not think you have to be a world-class soccer player to be a great coaching professional in soccer.
Okay. And we can even look at the example of Diego Maradona, who was a fantastic player, but he couldn't coach to save his life, you know.
Well, certainly there is the other side of it. Great players do not always make great coaches. We definitely agree with that.
Yep. You had mentioned as well that you have about 30 plus years of coaching experience. Over that time, what have you found to be some of the most difficult parts of coaching?
The challenges. Are there parents listening out there? I'd say parents.
I hope the parents are
listening. I hope they're listening too. You know, they're not objective. Let's just put it that way. Coach is not always right, but they are doing their very best, and your kid isn't being targeted or purposely slighted. And if you let the process play out and don't intervene, your kid's going to be better for it, unless it's a abusive or unsafe environment, I would say. And there's, I think, some parents that put up with that because their kid's on a winning team and they want their kid to get a scholarship. So I'd say that's where you should parent. You know, that's where you should show sensibility. So that would be a challenge. But in college, it's less so just because they're further removed.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, managing people and young people or any people, I mean, that's managing parents, but managing the kids. And really, it's getting a little bit harder because the kids, not because of anything they've done, but because of the way the world is.
Yeah.
And they come less, in some ways, less able to cope, in other ways, so much more advanced, but in some ways, less able to cope with the stresses and maybe disappointments or challenges or areas that are they have to push through. In some ways, I think that they don't all have come, they're not all coming with the coping skills, or there's just too much pressure on them. And so as a coach, figuring out how you're going to continue to challenge them and continue to stretch them, because it's not comfortable to get better always, while also being very, very mindful of the fragility or the vulnerability of some individuals, not everyone, but some individuals. That is a challenge, and it's something that I've had to really start to pay closer attention to without lowering standards or expectations, because it's hard to be great at coaching and great at developing players if you're constantly dummying down expectations. So that is a challenge. I think that's the single biggest challenge that we have, working with youth.
And when you say dumbing down the expectation, referring to, for instance, if you have a team of 18 players and, you know, you have your top flight players who get everything that you're doing and are able to get into the sessions really quickly, versus the bottom portion of your players who are a little slower to get the concepts and aren't technically there yet?
I'm talking a little less about that. That's a challenge that every coach has and that we've had forever. Is how to set a standard that is going to stretch the best players, but not leave behind the players that are, maybe their starting point isn't as high. That is absolutely a challenge. But that's a little less of what I'm speaking about. I'm speaking a little bit more about the psychology and the emotional piece. So this is, I guess, if I were to tack on greatest challenges, we're all judged by the wins and losses, right? Because we keep score, and we also are very competitive. We want to win championships. We want to win games. The process of doing that is one thing you're talking about, is how do you create an environment that's going to stretch the best while also not losing the weakest at that point in time, and really be hit the mark so that your individual players and your group is realizing their full potential. So that's a challenge all the time. That's a challenge for historically, and that's going to be a challenge forever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about a little bit more of being very process-oriented and growing kids as well as growing them as players, but developing them emotionally and psychologically and developing them to reach their full potential, while also having to pay attention to the results of our business, and having to push them or push the team to stretch themselves to be uncomfortable so that they can, you know, put themselves in a position to be the best they can be and win the game. So it's like, I'm a very process-oriented person, but this is a result-oriented business.
Yep, exactly.
And sometimes those things are mutually, it feels sometimes like they can be mutually exclusive. If you have to be very, very people-oriented and very, development-oriented, that's vital, right? That's an important piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
But if you have to do that to some of the players that are a little slower coming along,
mm-hmm.
It takes a lot of time and energy to do that. And how does that take away at any point in time from the result-orientedness of it? Is that player going to be able to get there? And how do they get there, and how much time is it going to take to get them there, if you know what I'm trying to say, versus geez, we've got to get this done, and I can't wait for that player. That could be in a physical way, that could be in a technical way, that could be in a tactical way, but it also could be in an emotional and a psychological way.
Yeah.
And that does take your time and your energy, which is what we do this for. But we are in a result-oriented business, so it does have to be about, well, who's getting it done and who do I need to go recruit or recruit to replace to get something done that we need to get done. So it's a puzzle, but I am sticking to process oriented because in the end, that's really the way to get there. And the results should, I believe, continue to happen if we all continue to focus on how do we get the most out of each kid and how do we get the best out of our team.
Excellent. I love it.
Well, it's a little, you know, it's maybe a little bit of over philosophizing about it, but it's really big picture stuff. But it's, you know, Ted, you were in the course. I think you heard Paul Marco say, "What's your coaching philosophy? What are your values? What are your principles? What do you hold dear that you're not going to be influenced by?" Situation, condition, pressures, outside pressures. What are you going to be about, and what are you going to hold true to? And the times that those things matter are the times when it's really, really tough, and it's really, really challenging, and you're not getting results, or you're in a little bit of a sticky situation, and you're not feeling super good about. You know, your team or your performance or your results. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to hold on to what we believe in. And it doesn't mean that we just stay the course and never change a thing. Because if you don't change anything, you can't expect different results. But I think the stuff that you hold true to, I think you have to stay, I think you have to stay with. If that makes sense to you, and because it's easy to give in to your morals or your values when you're not seeing it work. I thought that was very powerful for Paul Marco to open the premier course with that as, you know, a very important aspect of being a coaching professional.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it was great to have him. Well, as you and Dave as the instructors, I felt like I had a 6-hour flight home and I had to use the whole flight to decompress everything that we learned because it was a lot of information crammed into 5 days.
It was, Ted. It's rich. And I think in those courses, and I think United Soccer did a marvelous job of asking as many questions in those courses as they answer. And that, I think, is the power of the courses is that the takeaways are lasting because they require you to continue to ask yourself questions, and learning just carries on. It's not done when the week is over.
Yep, it's a continuous process. Now,
Now
to flip it from the difficult part, one of your favorite parts of coaching?
Yeah, favorite parts of coaching, without sounding corny, I love the process of supporting the development of young women to really grow and mature and become strong, confident, really kind of know thyself, know what they're capable of, realize they're capable of much more than they thought they were, happy, empowered, grown up, you know, women when they leave, 21, 22 years old. That's what I get to do in my job. And they come in as 17 or 18 year olds. They have, you know, great foundations, but I have an opportunity to help and support their growth and development to really be leaders and empower them to be confident professionals in whatever field they choose, be it they continue to play soccer, and we have a number that are playing professionally, which is outstanding, or do whatever it is they're going to do, that they end up kind of knowing they have a voice, knowing how to use it, knowing that they have the wherewithal and have the grit and the persistence, and that's a learned quality, that they can get through whatever tough things they have to get through, and that they really feel good about themselves and they believe in themselves and inside and outside. And again, that sounds very maybe corny or, you know, but that is what I love to do. And soccer is the thing I get to do it with, or how I get to do it. Mm-hmm. And I love soccer, and I love putting a team together, and I love that they make lifelong friends and that they're in the trenches together and they learn and know everything about not only themselves but each other, and that it's a deep connection, and that it's a sisterhood, and that's really, really powerful that they can make and keep and know how to really develop relationships with other women that can be people that they have supporting them throughout their college career, but also in their life after college.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of stuff, but that's what we try to do. And it's not easy, and we're not always perfect.
Yeah.
And but I think that our output is proven. I think that I feel like we are. I feel like I've been more accomplished at doing that. While I haven't hit the mark every single time, I feel like I've hit the mark as many times, and I feel really, really good about that. That is how I feel good about my career. And in the end, that's, I think, how I'm going to measure myself.
Fantastic. I do a similar thing in telling my boys that the team is like a brother. So that's nice that you were talking about it there. And I think it sounds like your program sounds a lot like the United Soccer Coaches, in that your players do get some great takeaways that last long beyond their time at Boston University.
That's for sure, Ted. And that's why I feel so connected to the United Soccer Coaches as a colleague, as a member,
mm-hmm.
and as a coaching professional in their coaching programming, because it's like our philosophies are aligned, and that's what we, yeah, and I feel important to send that message. Again, not everyone's going to believe every part of that, mm-hmm. or have that as part of every part of that as their coaching philosophy, but I think that if they can instill a little bit of that into their teams and into their philosophy, I do believe strongly in that. It's a little bit of like my religion.
Definitely, definitely. Do you, by chance, have an all-time favorite coach, whether one that you have been a player for or whether you've seen coach?
That is a great question. There's so many former coaches of mine and colleagues of mine that I like respect and that I take. I've taken things away from. I can't pick one. I mean, I guess I would have to say those three or four dads that, besides my own father, who was a coach on the side, he was a pharmacist, and my mom, who supported me every step of the way in being a coach when that was not a popular thing for a Jewish girl from Needham, Massachusetts to aspire to be when she grew up.
Mm-hmm.
There's three or four dads that were my first coaches in youth soccer, Adam Caputo, Vern White, Joe McDermott, those three guys, and then my high school coach, Carol Bambury. I have to say they set the course of my life in sport, and I think that those would be the four people that I would say I owe the most to. But then it's so many, and I feel so blessed. The coaches I meet when I teach courses at United Soccer Coaches, to my colleagues in Division One, to people, the women that and men that laid the groundwork coaching before me, my college coach. But I'd say those four people were significant in my life, besides my parents.
Of course. Great. Well, we are in towards the end of June now. What are you looking forward to over the next 6 months through the rest of 2018?
Getting geared up for the season, August 1st.
Here we go.
Preseason. So I'm on a week and a half vacation. Then I run my Terrier Training Soccer Clinic in end of July. And really, besides those two things, everything else is focused on gearing up for soccer season, for August 1st in the 2018 Boston University fall soccer season. And I'm so excited for this team. I love this group. I love the leadership, the seniors. We've got 10 seniors. Core group is wonderful. They're so committed and passionate. 10 freshmen coming in that we've worked really hard in recruitment and spent a lot of time in communicating to over the last 2 years. We all come together on August 1st for the singular purpose of, you know, becoming the best team we can be, having a good time, supporting each other, competing together. You know, we got a tough schedule. We start with Michigan and Michigan State. We're playing Princeton and BC and UConn and Hofstra in our non-conference schedule, West Virginia, Harvard, Dartmouth. I mean, we got a tough schedule. Mm-hmm. And the Patriot League is really competitive. Bucknell's won it the last 2 years. Navy is fantastic. Army has a new coach, and they're going to be an uptick. Lehigh, Holy Cross is an up-and-comer. We won the league the first 3 years. We were in the Patriot League. We lost in the finals 2 years ago. We lost in the semis. Both times we lost to the eventual title winner, Bucknell. And we are very motivated to win a championship again and win a championship this year. But I believe we have a great team that, as long as we play to our potential, we're going to make noise in the league and we're going to make noise in the NCAA tournament. So I hate to say I've not been this excited for a season for a couple of years, but every year maybe I feel this way. But right now I am, I'm like jumping out of my shoes. Can't wait to get started.
I was going to say, I could feel your energy on the other end of this phone call right now.
Yeah, I'm really excited. It's a great group, and we're going to be put to the test, but that gives me, that's exactly what you want to do. You want to be stretched, and you want to be measured against the best, and we're going to have an opportunity to do that, Ted. So hopefully we get to do this again in December, and I'm able to talk about all the successes of the season, and because I'd love to be a guest again. I really appreciate the invite.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I'll be sure to put it down in my calendar to follow up in December with you, because I'd love to hear how the season went. And right now we're actually down to our final three questions. So thank you again for your time so far. We're almost through.
Sure.
The first question is a bit of a read. So prior to kickoff, coaches will give players a few key points they want them to focus on during the game. And those points will vary based on your personnel, the tactics, the opposition, just to name a few. But if you could only give the same three coaching points to your players before every game moving forward, what would your three points be?
Number one would be compete. And that is a mental and physical state of mind. So that would be number one. Mm-hmm. Number two would be play. I'm a big believer of playing for each other. That is why you do it. It's not for you, but you're playing for each other. There is a bond on the field that you feel spiritually and also in the way you play and how you extend for each other. And the third would be play with purpose. So that one probably would be the most about play, about like actually execution.
Yeah.
And that would be execution with playing with intention. I guess being a coach that's trained the team and hopefully trained the team well, mm-hmm. That they have an idea, hopefully, of the way to accomplish the goals. Mm-hmm. And if they play with a purpose, that's trusting it, but it's the idea of playing with your with your intelligence, and that's an attack and defense, and that could be with possession in front of the defense, it could be in possession behind the defense, but it's just playing with a purpose so that I've hopefully created an environment where I've taught you enough about the principles of the game, mm-hmm. and you've had enough good training that you can rely on your ability to, you know, to play with a plan, to play with a purpose and intention. And that those would be it, and to trust it. And, you know, so I think that's consistent all the way from the start of the season to the end of the season. And I guess that's also part of my principles. Yeah, that would be it. I think that they've heard that a few times. I think if they're listening in,
yeah,
that would sound familiar.
Okay, perfect. Well, I just want to take a quick moment, Nancy, and share my appreciation for you. As you said, you've committed 30 plus years to coaching, and just based on the prior week that we had together, I'm sure that all of the players that you've had have tremendously benefited from your leadership. And I love that you stay true to your values. I mean, like you said, you're very process oriented, even though in the college game, it's a result oriented business. And so for you to remain so true to that speaks volumes of you and your character. And then the final point I'd like to make is just that I love the community service being set as a priority, and not enough coaches are focused on the person as opposed to just the player, which I think touches back to the idea of winning versus learning. And a lot of people, like we say, are focused on just getting those wins, just getting those results. But are we focusing enough on developing the person, on making sure that we're instilling good values in our players? And I think that you go above and beyond in what you do.
Thanks very much, Ted. I do my best, and you know what? I'm still learning. And, you know, I've set priorities this year of even doing more of that, of really focusing on the whole person. I think our environment at BU creates that, and I just have to continue to put the priority on those individuals and make sure that they know that that is my number one priority. I think sometimes that we can get away from that. Mm-hmm. I think our environment definitely supports it, but as a coach, we can get caught up in preparing the team for the match and the X's and O's and the, you know, doing all the administrative things, and I just have to continue to stay mindful that it is a relationship business number one, and that takes precedence over everything, and not to get caught up in all the tangent things that can suck our energy and too much of our time. So thanks so much, and you're doing good work there. I'm excited to listen to some of the podcasts coming up, and have a great summer.
Fantastic. Two more questions for you real quick.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Where can we connect with you online in case you have anyone that's interested in hearing more from you?
Oh, yes. Well, follow us on Go Terriers. That's our website, goterriers.com, mm-hmm. And go to the women's soccer page. And there's new stories up just about even this time of year, a couple times a week. And certainly when we open up in August, there'll be something on there every single day. We have great media relations folks at BU. The other is on Twitter and on Insta. You can follow us, and I'm going to give you the handle right now because I don't have it memorized. Social media is the way that I guess in this world that's how everybody does it. So we're at Terrier W Sock, at Terrier W S O C, and again, that's how you keep in touch with us. And then we have some clinics if kids want to experience, you know, BU.
Yep.
Women's soccer, and they're a youth player. We run a summer clinic, we run a fall clinic, and a spring clinic, and all our staff work the clinic. We really try to get to the no kids. It's certainly for ID purposes of recruiting, but it's really for more than that. We really want to impart some of our philosophy in that time we have with these kids,
yeah.
And that's at terriertrainingsoccer.com. So there's some ways for you to learn more about us.
Perfect, and we'll tag that up in the show notes. And for the final question, Nancy, if you could give one piece of advice to a coach, what would it be?
Wow. It would be Respect the game. Respect the kids. It's not about you. That would be it. It's our ego can get tied up in it pretty good, but have respect for the game, and treat. You know, these are whether they're youth or college players or even pro players. Just have respect for them. I've seen some things on sidelines that are appalling. That there's no place in the game for coaching professionals that don't respect the kids or the game. So that would be the thought I'd leave people with.
Beautiful. Nancy, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
All right, Ted. We'll catch up soon.
All right. Bye for now.
Okay. You take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks again for tuning into episode 13 of the Full 90 Coaching Podcast. Nancy provided some valuable insight into her coaching career and philosophy. Check out the show notes to find Nancy's contact info so you can get in touch with her. And, as always, if you enjoy listening to this podcast, we'd greatly appreciate it if you could leave us a review, as we're always looking for ways to make this podcast even better. Thank you so much, and remember, the better player starts with the best.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.